Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 22, Prithu Maharaj's Meeting with the Kumaras, text number 54. Viditasvam Dumrakesham Haraksham Dravinam Rikam Sarvesham Loka Palhanam Dadarak. Let's go in or something. Dadraika Pritor Gunan Viditasvam Dumrakesham Haryaksham Dravinam Vrikam Sarvesham Lokapalanam Dadaraika Pritur Gunan. Sarvesham Loka Palanam Dharaika Pritur Gunan Viditasvam. Of the name Viditasva, Dumrakesham. Of the name Dumrakesha, Haryaksham, of the name Haryaksha, Dravinam, of the name Dravina, Vrikam, of the name Vrika, Sarvesham, of all, Lokapalhanam, the governing heads of all planets.
Tadhara,
accepted.
Eka,
one.
Prithu
Maharaj.
Gunang,
all qualities.
Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C.
Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada.
After beginning five sons'
name,
Viditasva,
Dumrakesha,
Haryaksha,
Dravina,
and Vrika,
Prithu Maharaj
continued to rule the planet.
He accepted all
the qualities of the deities
who governed all the
other, he accepted the qualities
of the deities
who governed
all the other
planets.
All other planets.
Please repeat.
After beginning five
sons,
name
Viditasva,
Dumrakesha,
Haryaksha,
Dravina,
and Vrika,
Prithu
Maharaj continued to rule
the planets.
He accepted all
the qualities of the
deities
who
governed
all other planets.
Purport.
In each and every
planet, there is a
predominating deity.
It is understood
from Bhagavad Gita
that in the sun,
there is a predominating
deity named
Vibhishvan.
Similarly,
there is a predominating
deity of the moon
and of the
various planets.
Actually, the
predominating deities
in all the other
planets
are descendants
from the predominating
deities of the sun
and moon.
On this
planet, Earth,
there are two
Kshatriya dynasties,
and one comes
from the predominating
deity of the sun,
and the other
from the predominating
deity of the moon.
These
dynasties are known as
Suryavamsa
and Chandravamsa,
respectively.
When
monarchy existed
on this planet,
the chief member
was one of the members
of the Surya dynasty,
or
Suryavamsa,
and the
subordinate
kings belonged
to the Chandravamsa.
However,
Maharaj Prithu was
so powerful
that he could exhibit
all the qualities
of the predominating
deities in other
planets.
In
the modern age,
people from Earth
have tried to go to
the moon,
but they have not been
able to find anyone
there.
What to speak of
meeting the moon's
predominating deity?
The Vedic
literature, however,
repeatedly informs
us that the
moon is full of highly
elevated
inhabitants
who are counted
amongst the demigods.
We are therefore
always in doubt
about what
kind of moon adventure
the minor
scientists of this
planet have
undertaken.
Vijitasvam
Dumrakesham
Haryaksham
Dravinavrikam
Saresham
Lokapalanam
Dadaraika
Priturgunan.
After
beginning five sons'
name,
Vijitasva
Dumrakesha
Haryaksha
Dravina
and Vrika,
Prithu Maharaj
continued to rule the
planets.
He accepted
all the qualities of the
deities who
governed all other
planets.
Namo
Vishnu Padaya Krishna
Pristaya Bhutai
Srimate
Bhaktivedanta
Swami Tanamane
Namaste
Sarasatun
Deve
Gauravani
Pacharane
Nirvishesha
Shunivadi
Paskya
Dhyade
Sitarane.
Here,
the question of faith
is raised.
Who do we have
faith in?
In other
words,
in the Bhagavad Gita,
Krishna says,
Ya nisha
sarabhutanam,
tasyam
jagrati bhutani,
tasyam
jagrati
bhutani,
sa nisha
pashutomune.
That
what is
night
for all sentient
beings
is the time of
awakening from
self-control.
And
the time of awakening
for
all sentient beings
is the night for
the introspective
sage.
When Prabhupada
arrived in New York
one time,
the
reporter was
asking Srila
Prabhupada,
why do your
followers seem
so different?
Prabhupada said, they
have to be different
because they're
spiritual
and you're material.
As soon
as we come just like
everyone else,
the same ideas,
the same philosophy,
the same
style of
living, then
we become just like
everyone else.
But
Prabhupada came here
specifically
to change people
from, Or as he said, from hippies to happies.
Here, we find the basic principles of material civilization, namely faith and materialists.
In Kali Yuga, there are four defects. Well, there are always four defects. One of the defects is, besides imperfect senses, being an illusion, there is the and cheating, or cheating is very predominant,
and having committing mistakes, but cheating is very predominant, especially in Kali Yuga. Now, people have faith. The scientists have gone to the moon. And it seems that Prabhupada, within his books and his conversations, makes quite an emphasis, generally, upon the fact that they never went there. Now, by common sense, anyone can understand that they really didn't go there. It doesn't take an atomic scientist to figure out that the scientists are, that the government's cheating and the scientists are cheating. Just for a little example, they say, you can look up in the internet, there's a band of radiation outside the Earth's atmosphere which is so intense that any living entity that goes there will become fried by that radiation. And it increases when there are sunspots, when there's eruptions on the sunspot, it multiplies the effect. Therefore, it's estimated that in order to get through that Van Allen radiation belt, it would take around 15 feet of lead for a spacecraft, thick, 15 feet thick covering of lead in order to survive the radiation that one would have to go through. When the Russians first sent up spaceships, they sent up unmanned spaceships, namely monkeys, and they were all fried. So rather than sending up people and having them fried too, they decided not to go through that so-called adventure to go to the moon. But somehow or another, in spite of the fact that a year before, the general who was in charge of the space, the manned space landing on the moon, as well as the chief inspection engineer, they all protested to the government, to the Congress, that there was something wrong with the space program. It was not going to work. The chief inspecting engineer was about to submit to Congress a book detailing all the problems with the space program. Unfortunately for him, right a week before he was appeared before Congress, he and his family fell asleep in a car on a railroad track just when the train was coming by, mysteriously. And his book disappeared, never to be found again. And the general who was in charge of the space project, he was suddenly promoted into another area. And then 1 year after that, the manned space landing on the moon, man's landing on the moon, went without any problem whatsoever and came back without any problem whatsoever. Somehow or another, with a thin aluminum coat, whatever the metal was that spacecraft is made out of, somehow or another, the radiation in the Van Allen belt was so patriotic, so pro-American, it decided not to touch the spaceman. Just see how even the radiation's pro-American. And the list will go on. That's only an example that anyone who studies it, of course, recently I saw one website trying to refute all the refutations against the space landing on the moon. For instance, they have the example that when we can see in the pictures the spacecraft landing and the boosters are with great force applying themselves onto the surface of the moon. And lo and behold, in spite of the great force of the boosters in order to land this spacecraft along with the men in it, in other words, it was spacecraft plus men landing on the moon, somehow or another, not one speck of dust was raised.
And then you see the spaceman jumps out of the capsule somehow or another, and now he's suddenly become heavier than the spacecraft plus him and his other fellow travelers. And he lands on the moon and all this dust flies all over the place. So they explained it that the spacecraft was hovering above the surface of the moon, and it was wavering, it was going back and forth, and therefore somehow or another the force of the propulsion, that was the engine coming down on the moon, didn't disturb him one speck of dust. As soon as the moon saw that the Americans were landing on it, it became so peaceful that nothing could disturb it. It went into samadhi, the whole planet. So that's about the best explanation they could come up with. Never mind. Anyhow, it's just, they really have to dig deep into their imagination to come up with some of their explanations. So why do we go over all this? Because Krishna says, Imam Vishvate Yogam Proktavana Hamavyam. Krishna said, I spoke to the sun god. So is Krishna a liar? Was he telling Arjuna that actually, I have a nice story to tell you. Just sit here for a while in the chariot, right before a battle where everyone's going to get killed. I'll tell you a few good stories. One day I got intoxicated, and I started to talk to the sun god. And the sun god listened to me, and in my imagination, even the sun god began to talk to his son. I imagined the sun god, and then he had a son, and he started to talk. And this we call, I've invented something called parampara. Evam parampara praptam imam rajarshiyo vidu. So the same hallucination I had when I talked to the sun god, I'm going to give you the same hallucination right before the battlefield, right before the battle, so that you can hallucinate on the battlefield also. Unfortunately, we haven't invented LSD yet, but here's a nice, you know, hallucination for you. So is the Bhagavad Gita just a hallucination? Krishna, he was hallucinating that, my dear Arjuna, you believe in UFOs, right? You believe in extraterrestrial life, don't you? Well, let me tell you my story about it. And I spoke to the sun god, Vibhushan. So, in the beginning, Krishna appears to be quite intelligent. He says, the body's changing, and the soul's not changing. Any person with some intelligence, and that's not very common nowadays, but a little bit of intelligence, sumedhasa, they can see that their body's changing. It obviously doesn't end there for most people. They'll claim that their body's not changing. If you ask people on the street, or you tell them that your body's changing, it's not that everyone submissively accepts that. As a matter of fact, if you said your body, they'll say, no, my body hasn't changed at all. It's exactly the same body I had when I was a child. And it's exactly the same body that was in the womb of my mother. It's just grown, that's all. But it's exactly the same body. There's no difference whatsoever. And then you say, all right, you have exactly the same body. You have a different body. And they'll go, anyhow, whatever you say, they'll argue with. Tarka apratishta shrutiya vibina. And then you say, all right, if they do agree, the rare person who agrees, that their body is changing, then if you say, well, there's a person, you yourself, you're in that body, you're aware of so many different bodies, they'll say, no, it's not me. I'm a different person all the time. Oh, really? You mean I began the conversation by talking to John, and now who are you now? Are you Peter or Paul or Mary? They'll say, no, I'm a different person. Really? You mean when your mother calls you John, you're not there anymore. You've disappeared. Someone else has come. There are many people living in there. Such a simple explanation reality that the body's changing, but we ourselves are always the same, is incomprehensible for the majority of the people. Now, to you, that's within our realm of experience. It's also within our realm of experience that when we become attached to the results of our activities, we're in anxiety. The very idea of being attached, fearful at least, or expecting some favorable result in the future, puts us in anxiety, and that anxiety is suffering. So that's also within the realm of our experience. And that when we're not thinking about what the results are, we do much better. When a professional tennis player is absorbed in their activity, they're not just thinking, what happens if I don't hit the ball? What will my mother think? What will the crowd do? And by that time, the ball's past them. They have no time to hit the ball. They're too much absorbed in thinking about everything else except for the ball. Arjuna is advised, just keep your eye on the bird when he was about to shoot the target. Just keep your eye on the bird. Similarly, if one is keeping one's focus on the activity itself without, and what is the distraction? Worrying what the result of the activity will be. So Krishna explains that. So that's within our realm of experience also. When Krishna says, dayato visham pumsam, contemplating objects of senses, developing attachment, lust, anger, greed, illusion, forgetfulness, loss of intelligence, that's all within our realm of experience. Then when Krishna says, there's such a thing as knowledge, seeing things properly, seeing things according to reality. That can also be within our realm of experience, but it begins with understanding the difference between matter and spirit and who's controlling both. That there is a controller in the material world and it's not us. In other words, hearing Bhagavad Gita, we can go through so many different things that are within the realm of our experience, but then we come to something about Krishna talking to the sun god. Now, we can produce a tape showing Krishna talking to the sun god. We can't even show a picture of the sun god. We can't verify it empirically. We can verify it by reasoning that the fact that the universe is organized, that there's intelligence behind it, we can go through all the different steps of demonstrating the fact that there's intelligence behind the universe. And therefore, an intelligent person created the universe with planets moving their orbits, snowflakes falling in precise geometric patterns. He didn't invent planets or create planets that are useless. It's not like modern art. They just throw paint on a canvas. It has no value. It has no meaning. There's no sense behind it. There's no intelligence behind it. God didn't create a whole universe with no point in a sun and moon and stars and everything else. If he's intelligent, everything he's done has some point. Similarly, if there is a point behind everything, then we can understand that all these planets are meant for something, that they're inhabited by persons. And Krishna said, I talked to the predominating deity of the sun planet. And he had a fiery body. And you were there also. I was there because we're all eternal. Because we had a different body. That not everyone has to have exactly the same type of body you have. The sun god has a fiery body. We have this body. On other planets, they have different bodies. Just like in the ocean, the fish do not have exactly the same body we have. Nor the birds. Even on this planet, not every living entity has the same kind of body. In the middle of the ocean, the scientists have discovered that there is fire coming out from the ocean. And the fire is 600 degrees centigrade. Or I guess that's more Fahrenheit. But about 600 degrees Fahrenheit also. That's quite hot. If you ever put your hand in 600 degrees Fahrenheit, then it burns. It's hot. And they discovered living entities living in the fire.
And when they reduce the fire, the heat, only down to a mere 400 degrees centigrade, Fahrenheit, then the living entities start to die from the cold. That's not possible, according to most scientists. But does that mean we have to scramble our brains and think, well, the scientists are always right, even when they're wrong? When there was a mystic in England in the 1800s, he called all the chief scientists, including Wallace, who was the co-founder of evolution, to a hotel. And from the hotel window, he walked out the window in the front of all, right before all the scientists who witnessed it. And they all wrote an explanation or a witness. They all witnessed and wrote an article of what they witnessed, that this man just walked out a window and was in midair. And what did the rest of the scientific world, how did they take this? They said, not possible. All these scientists were wrong. Not possible. In other words, basically speaking, when you're in material consciousness and your whole idea is to stay in material consciousness, then you can take 1 + 1 = 3, and you can spend your whole life trying to convince everyone else that 1 + 1 = 3. And any other philosophy, any other example or proof that 1 + 1 = 2, you deny. You write articles about it. You have eyewitnesses. You have testimony. You use any means possible to convince everyone that 1 + 1 = 3. So does that mean that the emperor really has clothes on? And that the emperor takes on his new clothes made by the topmost fashion designer, and no one can see the clothes, but still they're all amazed at how beautiful the clothes are. Until one small boy steps up and says, "Look, Mom, the king is naked." Shush. So in the same way, we can spend our whole lives seeing how modern society is being cheated. You can go into historical examples, even up to the modern present time, where we go into Iraq because they have weapons of mass destruction, and they can't find any weapons of mass destruction. They're still charging the Iraqi government $10 billion every year to pay for the search for weapons of mass destruction. So if that's only one small example of cheating. But people are getting used to cheating. Matter of fact, if someone comes along and they're honest, people will feel threatened by them. Prabhupada said an honest person generally can't become influential in modern society, in the government especially, because the whole thing is meant to keep people in darkness. Therefore, although if we spent our whole time trying to convince people that they never went to the moon, some people will convince, but so what? Whether they went to the moon or not, it makes no difference whatsoever in our spiritual life. But Prabhupada emphasizes, so we don't get distracted or become doubtful. Maybe Bhagavad Gita is wrong. Maybe Srimad Bhagavatam is wrong. Maybe it's all Vyasadeva was in the Himalayas smoking marijuana and writing these books. Maybe it's just he was a nice person. He was a good writer, but who knows where he got his information from. No, we have to become convinced enough so we don't bother with it. We don't become distracted by these so-called authorities in modern society who are ultimately either being cheated themselves in ignorance, or they're consciously cheating others just to keep people hooked to their materialistic, atheistic point of view and their attempts to more or less control everyone through the process of sense gratification. Modern society is principally distracted by its movies, by its sports, by pornography, by all these different things, just to distract people from what's really going on. Otherwise, how people wouldn't tolerate.
how much they're being cheated. They're being given a piece of paper, and they're saying that this is money that the government just prints up and sometimes just presses a button and creates money out of nothing. So the government, you have $100, you think it's worth $100, and the government just decides to print another $100. So they just took 50 euro dollars away just by printing it up from nothing. And you're still thanking them for giving you $100. But now you only have 50. Then they print another. Now you only have 30. But you're thinking, you're convinced that actually the government's doing you a favor. Actually, it's not even the government. The government doesn't even control the Federal Reserve Bank. The Federal Reserve Bank, which prints up our money, is actually a private organization. It's not even part of the federal government. Anyhow, enough of that. Back to the point. Back to the real point, that if we want to change the world, it's not going to be probably by convincing people that we didn't go to the moon or all the problems of modern society, although we should be somewhat aware of them so we don't become distracted by them. We don't become convinced that by some democratic process the world will be changed. We have to become convinced that by purely chanting the holy name, by remembering the orders and the instructions of the disciple succession, and therefore becoming absorbed in Krishna consciousness, remembering Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the Panchatattva and all their followers, and in that way remembering Krishna's pastimes and separation, by becoming absorbed in that atmosphere of spiritual life and creating that atmosphere, as Maharaj Vidura, when he came back from pilgrimage, Maharaj Yudhisthira greeted him with the words, Bhavan Vidas Bhagavatas Tirtham Bhutat Swayam Vibho. That when we're actually Krishna's in our heart, we're actually conscious of Krishna, either by serving him dutifully, or more advanced than that, by seeing things through the eyes of scripture, therefore knowing exactly what Krishna wants us to do and how to do it, or actually being absorbed in the mood of feeling separation from Krishna, and therefore experiencing directly Krishna's association, and therefore manifesting Krishna in this world, his spiritual energy. Just like Srila Prabhupada, I remember one time I was in Boston, 1969, it was the disappearance of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada walked up the Boston Temple had just moved to a new location, I believe it was Beacon Avenue. Prabhupada walked up the steps where the second floor was the temple room. And as soon as he walked up, I remember there was the same picture of Lord Chaitanya still there in the temple in where they are now. And his arms were spread out, and the Panchatattva and the devotees were behind him doing Sankirtan. And before Prabhupada came, I remember looking at the picture, seeing the picture seemed to become ecstatic. And then suddenly Prabhupada walked up and the whole atmosphere became just like Vaikuntha. Without any anxiety, the whole atmosphere became completely different, transcendental. Why? Because Prabhupada was completely absorbed in the mission of Lord Chaitanya and the disciple succession. Therefore, they were all there along with Prabhupada. The whole spiritual world was there. And therefore, even one who's unqualified or unconscious or covered by the material energy couldn't help but feel the intensity of the spiritual energy present. And if we come to that platform, each and every one of us, then the Sankirtan movement will spread quite rapidly. That everyone's supposed to come to that platform. That's how the Sankirtan movement spread. Prabhupada pointed out that people take our books on Sankirtan not because of our clever techniques. Well, sometimes that's why they take the books. But generally he said that because people are struck with wonder when they see the faces of the devotees, how determined and enthusiastic they are. So that only comes from real Krishna consciousness. That's a way of defeating all these crazy philosophies, all this cheating that's going on, not simply by pointing out the defects of the modern scientists, breaking people's faith in materialistic life is good only if it actually helps people take to the, develop some firm faith from the spiritual perspective. Unless we did that, unless we pointed out with logic and arguments the fact that they didn't go to the moon, then people would say, well, we went to the moon, we found out your books are wrong. There's no one there. There's something wrong with Vyasadeva. We don't know what happened to him or how he got these ideas, but he was wrong, that's all. So we have to defend our position, but not spend so much time defending our position, we forget about what our real position is, namely Krishna's servants. And we don't care whether there's a man on the moon or millions of men on the moon, we just care about Krishna. But because Krishna said there's a man on the moon, therefore we accept it. Because we accept that Krishna is actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Comments? Yes.
So the moon is a heavenly planet, and therefore, why are we able to see it with our gross senses if it's a heavenly planet?
Why not?
Because
you don't think you think everything should be invisible?
Not everything, but I.
No, it's heavenly. You go to Miami. You go. Well, people think Los Angeles is a heavenly planet sometimes. Does that mean that people are coming from somewhere like Iraq in the middle of the desert? If they come to Los Angeles, they can't see it. No, it's a heavenly planet. It's just more in the mode of goodness. Even on this planet, just like this temple is like a heavenly planet. It's beyond that. It's transcendental. But we can still see it. But we don't see it completely or fully because we don't see anything fully because we have cataracts over our eyes. But the sun is also a heavenly planet. So is Venus. All those. So we shouldn't think they're invisible. They're just, life there is different from here. They have bodies, but their bodies are more subtle. So we may go there. We may not be able to always see the demigods who live there, but we may be able. They make themselves visible sometimes. When the demigods came here, the inhabitants of the planet at that time could see him, could see the demigods. But sometimes when Krishna was in the womb of Devaki, the demigods came, but they made themselves invisible. So sometimes they're visible and sometimes invisible. That's part of their powers. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.